Before we get started with this next episode, if you'd like to support the podcast, please visit anchor.fm/Lilith's Left Hand. There are links for the new website, lilithsleftand.com, where you can follow the blog and any other happenings at Lilith's Left Hand. You can share on various social media through the Anchor site, and please consider subscribing there at any of your favorite podcatchers, and rate and review us if the opportunity exists for you. Anything you can do to support the show would be greatly appreciated. Take good care of yourself.
Left Hand Podcast. I am your co-host, Jessica Van Wardenberg. Hey, everybody. I'm excited to be back with my co-host, Emma. Hey, Emma.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited. Could you please explain what we're doing today?
I am super excited. So we have a guest today, our second guest. So Jay Percy, welcome, Jay. So for those who do not know Jay, Jay is an Obeah woman, a Caribbean Londoner and sacred artist, exploring healing and spirituality through psychedelic art. She sees art as the language of the subconscious, a link to ancestors and a portal into endless realms. She is interested in the intersection of plant medicines such as psychedelics and the therapeutic applications for healing. She also views psychedelics and plant medicines as an important part of building spiritual practices, and she's also a vehement anti-prohibitionist. Somebody say the word for me.
Vehement anti-prohibitionist. Say that 5 times fast.
Thank you so much. Welcome, Jay.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm on my favorite podcast right now, so I'm very, very happy.
Oh, I'm super excited that you've come on. I love chatting with you.
You guys, you should see Jay today. She looks amazing and has the coolest crystals. I don't know. I'm just excited. We're also really excited to sit with you today.
That's beautiful.
So, Jay, I know you, obviously, from the Obeah Mentorship Program. So Jay was in the first ever one that I ran. So that was super exciting. And I feel like that was such a big thing for me to reach out. But how did you find it? What was it like being a student? You already had a practice, didn't you?
I already had a practice, but I think when I met you, I sort of said, I do have a practice, but I'm kind of like one of those flailing arm tube men, like spinning my tires in the mud. Like, not, it was kind of like I was doing things, but kind of aimlessly. So I actively sought you out, Emma. I think I was quite a pest with it as well. But in doing so, going on to the mentorship, I was really able to sort of make my practice more cohesive, or, even areas where I felt like I had this figured out quite well, but I didn't have the vocabulary to articulate that.
It's the small stuff, isn't it?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's just been such a transformational process. It really has been.
Well,
and so needed during the coronavirus. Sorry, go on.
Oh, no. I was just going to say that just brings up such a good point about, like, when you have a mentorship or you have a mentor for your practice, like, the whole purpose of mentors is not just the teaching part, but, like, helping you find yourself part that your practice is not Emma's practice. Your practice is distinctly your practice, and you just had somebody helping you, teaching you some stuff along the way, and helping that out.
It definitely felt like that. And I think any of these sort of spiritual journeys, that's what it really should be. If you're looking for a mentor, if you do find a mentor, it really shouldn't be someone who's trying to force their dogma on you, because there are limitless things in this universe that we're yet to fully understand, even as like spiritual or magical practitioners, whatever we call ourselves. We've still got a way to go. The universe is infinite. There's always going to be a new way to do something. So yeah, the mentorship is entirely helpful. You just need like the right mentor, which I feel you have been, Emma.
Oh,
so
thank
you. Yeah, that's really helped to put me on the right path and given me that freedom to like learn and grow. It's been beautiful.
Well, I'm glad. So with that said, what is your spiritual practice? What does it look like?
Oh boy, are we going to talk about the day to day, the big stuff, the small stuff?
Whatever you want, favorite death, or the hard stuff.
Yes.
Oh. let's start how it, with something really simple, I guess. My day to day, I'm now really realizing that this isn't something I separate. It's almost like the society we live in, it's got to fit into neat little categories. You go to a building to go to school, you go to a building to go to exercise, you know, it's really segmented. In my day-to-day, the spiritual isn't like some building that I go to once a week outside of myself. It's become ingrained in everything I do each day. So how I wake up with intention. I speak to myself with intention. I speak to others with intention. I think, yeah, that word's been coming up a lot for me recently. I feel that's what I'm gaining the most in my day to day, this doing things with intention and working with the herbs, the medicines. That's what it boils down to.
Because psychedelics are like, they're a big thing for you, right? Like the medicine side of it and like the practical applications. And I don't mean medicine in just the kind of hippie way. I do mean that a little bit, but also the practical, almost clinical side of medicine as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. I do feel it's holistic, right? We have systems where if you're going for healing, you're thinking, oh, I've just like broken a bone and I need to somehow knit that back together. But for some of us, you know, I've experienced a lot of chronic illness in my life. So having something that works holistically in my body, so I get my mind right, and once you get your mind right, your body tends to follow, right? That's what the psychedelics are so helpful for, because it really helps you to like find your North Star, I guess, and piece you back together.
I love that. That sounds like really good. I like that.
Yeah, it's like a way to find the door for later use. You know, like we don't want to do it all the time. It's not like, I heard somebody on a podcast say this one thing, and I can't, I'm sorry. I'm going to tell you what it said. I don't know who said it. She was amazing. But she was talking about using those as doorways. And then you could, but you don't want to have it every time, because what, you want a butler opening your door every time? You have to learn it yourself. So like it feels like it helps you find the door that then with your practice you get to open. Is that, what do you think about that?
I completely agree with that. That's such a beautiful analogy. The way I like to think of it is, it's kind of like, there's a difference between magic and alchemy, right? The magic is the stuff it's like the high magic stuff. It's the stuff that we set aside time for rituals for, and we practice these rituals and you invite energies in. The magic is the high stuff we do at every, on like rare occasions. We do magic on special occasions. The alchemy is kind of like the integration of it. So you're like alchemizing, you're having to take what you've learned from those magical psychedelic experiences, and you're then having to go into the world and you're having to like apply it to what you're learning. And in that way you learn and you grow. And I guess maybe there's a neuroscientist somewhere that can tell you grow new neural pathways or something. But it really is expansive,
right.
Like
we do.
That. Yeah.
I mean, not because of the drug.
No.
But because we are creating new neural pathways in our brain, we are shutting the ones down that do not work for us, and then we end up creating them. That's a real thing that actually happens. So you are totally correct.
I am a training psychotherapist. I'm doing okay, but there are there are lapses. We'll get there. We'll get there.
I agree. I think that is really fascinating, which is why I wanted to like just say something. Like the fact that we actually can rewire our brains or, you know, the way that we think is really fascinating. And sometimes we need help with learning how to do that. Some people can do it. Some people are, it just depends. We're all so different. People are so different. So your training, is that what you're saying? You're training to help people do this rewiring.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm training to do, because I think it's so important. And once I specialize as once I qualify as a psychotherapist, I'm going to specialize as a psychedelic psychotherapist. And as soon as that hits legality in this country,
I just saw a news print about that. Is that happening for you guys soon in the UK?
They're playing around with the idea, but let's see. Can't trust these people to promise you anything.
I did see something in it in the news. So I just didn't know if it's. I don't know what's real.
No, that's kind of what this abusive partner of a government does to you. It's like they make you question what's real and not. It's. That's the psychedelic trip. The mushrooms are the reality.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And then you start finding all these words, like we learn all these words about like how narcissists can gaslight us and all this stuff. And you're like, wait, we have all these cool words for describing what's actually happening. Why aren't we talking about it? It's only like Joe Schmo across the street gaslights me. How about like the whole thing?
Well, I guess some people don't have this in their vocabulary. I guess playing a bit of devil's advocate, they don't have it in their vocabulary, so they don't accept it as a real thing. For a large swathe of our society, unfortunately, unless it's like plastered on the front page of their favorite tabloid, that, you know, it's not real for them, which is really unfortunate. It's a poison on our landscape.
It is.
So you have found that working with plant medicine helped you heal your body.
Definitely. When I was 21, I was diagnosed with PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. So what that means is like every month that your ovary releases an egg, it normally creates a follicle to push out the egg, but then that sort of shrinks back down. It goes to normal. With me, it's sort of stays as a cyst on my ovary, and I did all I could at the time to like exercise and eat healthily, and I dropped a ton of weight, and I thought that was like, oh, I must be so healthy, look at my abs. And then I got violently ill, was hospitalized, had a huge cyst on my ovary. I laugh because I think it's kind of naive how I thought like I'm at peak health because I've reached this ideal weight. No. You know, when you're a young woman, that's what you think is the truth, and you get old and you realize it wasn't. That cyst on my ovary was that sort of moment for me. And then a couple of years later, I'd sort of found the mushrooms and started working with them. And it's really through the messages that you're getting on them. It's almost like a really nice nagging mother telling you, like, sweetheart, what are you doing to your body? Why are we acting this way? Why are we talking so negatively about ourselves? And, you know, what it really helps you to understand is how much starts in the mind. You know, we see this in texts like the Kybalion, all is mental. I don't know, for me, the mushrooms, it really just showed to me how much it was in my mind, you know, the poisoning thoughts that I was saying, which was essentially weakening the divine feminine. Of course it's going to land in my uterus. Why wouldn't it land in the feminine place in our bodies?
Yeah, a creative place.
a creative
place where
play.
We create everything. Yeah. And that is
and I was
really,
choked.
Yeah. And PCOS, for those who don't know about it, like, come on, you guys, you all know. It does have a lot of hormonal components. So there is a lot of stuff going on with the hormones, which is what create, like, hormones are our building blocks for what creates us.
They really are.
Yeah. I'm doing a yoga teacher training, and we have this lady in our group who is, she studies bones, people bones. And I don't remember exactly what the name of it is. but she does research on human bones. And she was saying in class how the feminine, when somebody decomposes, you cannot tell the difference between a man and a woman. Their skeletons are the same. And I just kept thinking about that, about how much it is that our hormones are creating everything. Mm. And so PCOS is really particularly difficult for the human bodies that get it, because it is really playing with those building blocks.
Yeah, totally playing with those building blocks. And I really just needed to do something about it. And for me, the psychedelics have helped to rebuild those building blocks, I guess.
And allow you to feel like you have some power over those building blocks. They're not just like randomly attaching to you.
No, it reminds me that I am power. That's what it reminds me. I am power. Not that I need to seek external validation to feel empowered. Not that this brand of red lipstick is going to make me feel like a better woman. It's none of that. I am the power. I am the source. And I don't mean that as me. I mean that as every single human being on this planet. You are the source.
For me, animism is a massive part of my witchcraft and Obeah practice, which informs the medicine then that I make with the plants. So, for example, in Obeah, when people do smudging and they just burn the sage, and it's not actually smudging because, you know, there's all of the songs and the preparations and all of the things that take place.
It's taken out of the cultural context of the thing.
Yeah.
And have some idea of what you're attempting to do.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm asking is, what part do you see the plant spirits playing in the healing aspect of psychedelics?
I think they are the teacher, right? They've lived a life and they express themselves in a certain way, and it's so abstract. You're learning from this idea of like a mycelial network, and I love this idea of a mycelial network. It's the mushrooms are just the fruiting body. Underneath the ground, you have this sort of like biological internet, and I hate describing it that way, but I think it's probably the quickest way to get over that idea. It's like this decentralized network of mycelium, and it teaches us in that respect how we're supposed to, you know, commune with community. And I know that sounds like a really distant message when it comes to like healing, but it really isn't, because what you start to be able to do is apply this to things like the biosocial model, where you see that if humans are away from other humans for too long, we develop things like dementia. You know, we actually need to be mycelium in order to keep our health. And what you're doing is mimicking how they are. That's what they're teaching you.
I think that's so great. I love talking about mycelium networks.
Because
when you said internet, I was like, it reminds me, like, I want to say interweb, which is the thing you say to make fun of the word internet, but it does feel more appropriate for the mycelium.
Interweb.
Like, the interweb.
The interweb.
And I think, like, what you're, to your point, I think that, like, you know, mycelium is, in nature, can filter, right? It's a really amazing filtering agent. And it's also connecting things. So it, like, for us as a community, I think that this mycelium interwebs it's to filter out the shit we don't want and help us more easily connect with other people. And so, like, if you're using a spirit that connects to things on this level, it's helping you filter out the all of the marketing and kind of the nonsense, some of the stuff that we see on a regular basis. So it's filtering all of that out so you can actually feel the connection that you are a part of, because we are, right, a part of that network.
Yeah, that's entirely right. It acts as a filter too. It's this, it gets away the rubbish and you get to focus on the whole wholesome, meaningful stuff that your soul really wants to. And when you have that, you know, your body starts to follow. You start to get purpose and alignment. And I think since working with these medicines, I don't just work with the mushroom, you know, I've worked with Sananga. That's been an interesting teacher.
What was it?
Sananga.
Oh, is that the eye drops one?
Yeah, it's an eye drop.
I'm really weird about putting stuff in my eyes. I'm such a wimp.
Me too. I wear glasses because I can't stick things in my eye. Sananga?
Sananga. It's okay. A South American plant. I work with Sananga. It's a South American plant that's, you know, brewed down into an eye drop medicine, which when dropped into the eyes, it's really meant to clear you, really clear of, it sounds so horrible coming out of my voice and my accent. I feel like it should be coming out of a South American's mouth. It gets rid of that bad energy, you know? It's just bad energy. It's, I really do feel like I am butchering a bit. But I work very closely with that. And that's been very recent in my practice, I'd say, probably since the summer. But I've been working with it a fair bit. And it's really quite interesting because you lie down, you go into your trance state through breathing exercises, and you drop a little each into the inner corner of your eyes. And you open your eyes to blink this medicine into your eyes, and it stings like chili peppers in the eyes.
You're so brave.
No. Like, I will meditate for 7 years.
And I'm sure someone's probably wondering, like, why would you do that? That just sounds so pointless. It sounds like you're just doing something to jump on a bandwagon. Like, no, when you're working with this medicine, what you realize is you're having to, like, breathe through this immense, like, physical sensation in your body. Your whole body, like, pulses in a way that you've never experienced. And you're having to train your body to breathe through this, like, new, quite scary experience. And in working with the plant in this way, you step away from ceremony space, and you're kind of able to deal with your day-to-day a bit more like that. You're able to breathe through it, and it teaches you how to be patient in that sort of tough scenario. So the ceremony being, you know, the sacred magic, and the day-to-day, the taking away and practicing what you practice in that ceremony space. Once again, going back to the idea of the alchemy.
Yeah, right. And even, like, within magic itself, whatever form of magic or whatever path or tradition you practice, if it's something that is new to you, particularly if you've been raised in a different dominant culture or religion, sometimes when you begin to experience these new paths and traditions, whatever they are, they can be quite frightening, if not because of them themselves, then because of people's reactions to them and all of that kind of stuff. So in that same way, we have to confront fears and difficult times. And do you feel like the plant medicine helps you deal with all of that better?
Yeah, definitely, because I'm able to it's this idea of like being in a dream and, you know, facing your fears head on instead of running away, because each time you go back to sleep you're just going to have the same dream until you battle this thing, right? It really has parallels to that, and you have your day to day, and instead of trying to run from your fears or yourself, you're not. And I think what's really struck me with this is how much I was running from myself before, and how little I need to feel the need to run from myself now.
Which is such an amazing transformation. Yeah. And I think that it doesn't start to happen for a lot of people until we are older. It's funny because you look at all of these magazine books. I love fantasy. Okay, we all know. I love fantasy novels. And there are so many of them are like these kids that are having this like transformational moment. But I feel like for women, I don't know about not other than what I am. So I'm just like, I happen to know a lot of women that we kind of, that happens later in life. Not maybe 30, maybe 40. You know what I'm saying? It just happens a little bit later. And maybe it's just our culture, right? Because we are so indoctrinated and so enculturated. That's a word, right? Enculturated?
I don't know. If it isn't, it's a great word, and it should be.
So I just think I'm so glad to hear you say that, because it's really hard shadow work, kind of an empathy and love for yourself to do that. And so I'm really excited for you to I mean, sure, that doesn't mean you feel that way every day.
Well, thank you for that, first of all. That was really lovely. And every day, no. Some days you do feel like, oh, is it worth it, or should I be extending my kindness today in a way that I wouldn't normally? But I guess a part of the practice is it's a practice. You're practicing being a human. That's what you're doing. You're practicing being not, I don't want to say nice, because that almost seems pandering to like external.
The kind of human that you want
to be.
Yeah, and even like, you know, with that nicety, you still have to have that hard edge and those firm boundaries in place. So, you know, it's not pandering. It's,
and nice means different things to different people, right? So you're like, it's more like, and this is why I like it, and this is why, like, I think that's really cool what you're saying. So many of us are learning from our culture, religion, whatever that we grow up with, what nice and not nice is, what good and bad is. But what we are getting to do on this left-hand path, right, is decide what's nice and not nice, what's good and not good. So, like, you are finally, like, at a point in your life that you are deciding what is nice, what nice means for you.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I couldn't have gotten here without the plants or the fungi. They've all been helpful. They've all been important. They've all had a place. Even weed.
Yeah, and all plants, really. I mean, like, sometimes we hear the word plant medicine and then we think immediately we're talking about psychedelics, but we're not. No. I mean, it's all kinds of plants. It's so many different kinds of plants. And it does not have to make this huge mental shift like sometimes happens, you know, when we're talking about psychedelics. But like certain herbs that you grow in your garden and make a tea with can make such a nice, subtle shift. Those are important too, because magic, alchemy, all the stuff that we're talking about, if you can't appreciate subtle shifts on a regular basis, then you give up. Because you're like,
we wouldn't be doing this, would we?
Yeah.
What would be the point? No, those subtle shifts, you're entirely right. Because when we think of altered states of consciousness, we think of, or we tend to, en masse in society, think of these big changes. So, oh, I was drunk and hungover, or I was completely wasted, or completely stoned. Those are the extremes, right? But you can alter your state of consciousness by simply walking up to, heck, a parent who you know, and only you alone know, are angry because of a certain way that they raise an eyebrow, and oh, you are, you know, you're enraged. That's an altered state of consciousness, literally just by coming into contact with someone else's aura and interacting with that.
Totally.
Did that resonate with you?
Yes, I was like, I live with a nearly 13-year-old, and I won't talk about her other than, like, she is amazing and wonderful. So nothing, I'm not talking shit. But, like, if she would say something to me and I would look a certain look, and she would know immediately what I was talking about. Or, like, it's so funny because my husband, Paul would be like, what just happened? But she would pick up immediately. So I get it. Like, there are these, sometimes there's these bodies that you get connected with, and that's like plant medicine. You're just like tuning in. I like
you
to say
you are tuning in. Do you know, I love and hate saying that I'm a hippie, because comes so much like cringe. But our language really isn't designed for this sort of expansive talk. It really isn't. The English language especially. I was reading Braiding Sweetgrass, really, really good book. And it was saying that 70% of the English language are all nouns, and it's 30% verbs, so 30% doing words. Whereas the woman who has written this book, when talking about her mother tongue, it was something like 70% verbs and 30% nouns.
Oh my gosh, I love this conversation.
Yeah, because we have such an emphasis on stuff. They have an emphasis on community and being and doing. So literally, sometimes we don't have words for these things unless they are cringy hippie words, because our language is not expansive enough. It's not healing centric. It's not.
Also, our words get taken like by other people and co-opted to mean something else, so that we lose the power of what it is.
Yes.
Sometimes, I think. Because tuning in is like, okay, I'm a huge nerd. I'm a Reiki master. So I love talking about energy stuff, right? And when you do, when you're working with somebody, you're giving them an attunement. You're tuning their energies. Well, not you. Spirit is doing it through you. But so I think that somehow the concepts get taken either like whitewashed so that you don't know what's happening, or just kind of use, like, you know, sometimes they change the words in the dictionary to mean the new thing. You're like, now it just doesn't mean it. But it does sound so hippy dippy to say true, guys. And I just want to say one thing about language that I just learned that I find that goes along with what you're saying. So I've been learning a lot of Sanskrit words, and the person, my teacher, said to us the other day, do you know that all words in Sanskrit can become a verb? They can all be verbalized. So any word, that's why, like, I think one of the parts of, like, translating sacred old ancient texts and stuff and poetry is really interesting, because you'll get translations that are one is very different from the other because they decided to use it that way or the other. But I just thought that was so cool, because you're like 70%, and then there's one that is 100%, and it's ancient and we don't use it.
Maybe we should have a language that is more dedicated to doing things and healing people as opposed to stuff. I don't know how we move for that, but
Can I tell you something? I think that we did have that, and that it was purposely taken out. And I think that, like, coming at things from a left-hand path
and the idea that we can change things and that doesn't have to be this system is really important. I was talking to this my same kiddo the other day, and we were talking. She said saw something about anarchism, and she said something, and I was like, "Well, I'm an anarchist." And she was like, "You are?" And I said, "Yeah. What do you know about it?" She said, "Well, this is what she learned in school, and so she's this is what she's repeating to me without a book." Right?
I'm already livid. Me too. I'm pre-livid. Go on.
Well, you, Mama, are someone that doesn't believe in governments. Check. Got it. So far, so good. But
not wrong on that one.
But you have no good alternatives. So therefore, it's a completely useless ideology.
Am I allowed to say this? I feel
yes,
like
please.
The people who teach this in schools are the same people who only have sex in the missionary position. Come on.
It's just we're trained to have to think that we have to work inside this one box.
It's so bizarre.
And it's not.
I don't get it.
Oh, so there is a new book by David Graeber that I didn't read yet that just came out. Emma, do you know who he is?
Uh-huh.
He is like, okay. So he had died, but he was writing a book, and it's talking about history and kind of pre-colonization history. And there are societies that have the more left-hand path, kind of community-oriented, non-governmental, but we just were not allowed to know about it. So it's so funny. I mean, we're not allowed to know about it, meaning we just aren't.
It's not
all
there,
of it,
is it?
Has
There's
been destroyed.
There.
It's been destroyed. Yeah. I didn't do it. I wish that it hadn't happened. So I need to stop weeing. But humanity has destroyed that. Nobody, like, we don't want you to know that there's another way. And, like, they teach at school, there's no other way. And so then I looked at her and I was like, thank God you're homeschooling with me.
I know,
this is great. I really feel like I wasn't sure that I was doing the right thing, but now I am.
Now you know you are. That isn't school. That isn't education. That's brainwashing. And
for me, this is why it's important that we begin, you know, building community with people who, you know, when I talk about community, we don't have to necessarily like or agree with everyone and all of their opinions within that community, but it has to have some basic, you know, empathy and all of that kind of stuff. But yeah, building community is so important to tackle.
And it just reminds us to always think about what we know, which is so important, because when you're walking around thinking that you know stuff because somebody told it to you and you were, you know, what do you actually know?
I think it also goes back to what we were saying before about the English language being not very good at describing
Horrible.
Doing rather than, you know. And I think if we become if we have communities where everybody is active in a meaningful way in them, then maybe then we can see the change in that language being used. Who knows?
Yes. And it would also have to include a lot of, like, I'm like, I had so many thoughts at that same at one moment. I almost said empathy and love, and then the next thought that came into my head was like goddess work. It requires so much goddess work, you guys.
Well, is that what spirit's telling you?
Oh, for sure. I mean,
oh, yeah,
like everybody, not female, male, not I mean, like all genders.
Yeah.
Because I truly think that we should all be she they.
Yeah.
Men, women, all people, she, they. That's what we are. Because the way that I see our masculine and feminine combining, or those energies, the moon, the sun combining, the creative part of all of us,
I know,
is that moon part.
Yep.
And on that note, Jay, I really want to talk about your art, because I love your art. Oh my gosh.
Oh, thank
I am
you.
A massive fan. So I have a print of the Obeah woman, and then I have a painting art that you did of Marie Laveau.
Yes.
So tell us about your art.
I have been painting since I was a kid, and then I stopped for 7 years, and that was dumb. Don't do that. And then I got back to it and realized it was the thing that was missing from my existence for a quarter of my life. I think it was even a third of my life at that point in time. I just got rid of something that was like so dear to me. So I'm painting again. And initially when I started out, it was really around this idea of the feminine. I don't know what it was. It was just the idea of the feminine always really appealed to me more than, I guess, the idea of the masculine. Maybe we see so much masculine in the day-to-day, in the way we operate, and, you know, sort of our advertising, everything's so sexually aggressive. Maybe it was like my subconscious going, no, we want to reach out to what is pure and ours. So I started painting a lot of nudes. And then that slowly changed over time with working with the medicines into almost like explorations of what it's like to interpret the world through an entheogenic lens. And I've chosen the word entheogenic instead of psychedelic here. Mm-hmm. Entheogenic pertaining to herbs that help you, or herbs or fungi that help you to speak to the god figure source. That's what I do. I express my communication with source through painting.
And I suppose it's... sorry, Jessica, go on. Yeah.
I just wanted to ask you a question about what you said. If you could... do you know why you stopped?
I do know why I stopped. I told myself I would just be a starving artist and it would get me nowhere. And I was really cruel to myself about it. I told myself that, you know, it was just something silly, a dream in the back of my mind, and I would never, ever be an artist. And I just told myself a story. That's why I stopped. All this mental. I changed the story and here I am.
Yeah, because so many of us put off our dreams and the things we want to do. Even if I can remember, I worked in a call center on the business team and it was very kind of corporate and like totally not me at all.
I can't imagine you doing that.
I know, like, I wasn't there.
Sure, in another life.
But it was seen by everybody as like a good job. But I hated it, so I left. And my sister worked at a school for autism, an autistic specific school, and she said, you know, we're always looking for staff, so why don't you, you know, just to start as a learning support assistant, come and have an interview. And I'm like, oh, I just don't know, because it's not something I'd ever considered as a career. But I hated this job, so I thought, do you know what? It can't be any bloody worse. So I left and went for it, and I got the job. And it turns out, like, it's great, and, you know, I'm a teacher there now, and so it's been really good. But when I first started, I can always remember my dad, who is Jamaican, was saying to
me...
Oh,
boy.
Yeah. You know where this is going. It's like, what are you doing? It's like, you're mad, leaving this really good job. Why are you leaving? It's a really good job with solid, you know... You're guaranteed to, you know, progress and all of that kind of stuff. It's like, why are you going? And because at first it was an initial pay cut as well, you know.
Was it a big pay cut as well?
It was.
Or just enough to make a difference.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But then you have to weigh it up, don't you? You get to that position where you have to weigh it up. So, you know, did you encounter that in your art, like... Because I know you have Caribbean heritage. And I think part of that is because obviously my grandparents came to the UK as immigrants and the focus was on you worked hard because, you know, you're building a new life. So what was it like for that? Just out of my own personal curiosity. You
know, I have three out of four grandparents are immigrants. Doing well there, of course, it comes with its own set of experiences because they came over to focus on their families and that was their journey. And I think some of the time you do get you know, people in your family who put their fears onto you because perhaps they don't feel that it is safe for you. And it's really coming from this place of love, but they don't know how to, but they don't know how to communicate that very well. So it becomes it just becomes this really heavy conversation where you feel pressured by, you know, some people in your family. But do you know what? My father, his dad was a drummer in a jazz band. And my dad, I remember when I was very small, I think he was on an episode of Top of the Pops or something like that. He was trying his hand at being a rapper or something. But he ended up upsetting someone in the wrong position very early on. So that went down the drain very quickly. And he had always said things to me, you know, I used to play flute and piano as a child. And he'd be like, oh, you can't do that because, you know, you're not going to make any money off of it. So that kind of extended into my arts as well. Like, oh, you know, you're not really going to make any money off of that. You've got to think of a backup plan. I guess because they've had situations where they perhaps didn't get as far as they wanted, that sort of fear of using creativity as your sole purpose gets passed down in some ways. Yeah. My mum, not so much. I think my mum will probably tell you she would have wished that I become an actress or something, a Broadway star. I think that's what she would have wanted for me.
Well, it's, I don't know, it says a lot about our society that creative people, you have to be raised with money in order to be a creative person, mm-hmm. because then you can be financially dependent. But if you don't have the money, how could you possibly use your time for your creativity? Our creativity without money is given to others. So we're still extremely creative. We're just giving it.
You know, and even like, it's always the arts that are the first to have budgets cut. And
oh gosh, yeah, no one cares about the arts, but everyone sits watching Netflix every night, not realizing they're watching
all of the
art.
Lockdowns, didn't they? All of the books we read, all of the writings we read, all of the
totally,
you know.
Yeah, it's all, anything that is a creative expression of someone's inner world or created inner world, that's art. And you know, when I said at the beginning, yeah, I didn't paint for 7 years, don't do that, that's dumb. I will say that again. Don't do that, that's dumb. Keep creating. Always.
That's the fucking loop.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be somebody's job or source of money in order for you to do it. Like, I think sometimes people will be like, well, if I can't do it this way, then I won't do it at all. And you're like,
I told myself that. If I can't do it as a job, then I'm not even going to do it as something I like to do to relax and wind down. I'm just going to completely throw it away. And that was wrong. You need these things to keep you sane.
Well, I find that you are very empowering. Like when I look at your stuff on Instagram, which I will admit I don't look at Instagram a lot. But when I do, I always look it up and see what you're up to. And you talk a lot about, I don't know, it feels like more about realism. Like, it's okay if you have a journal and every picture isn't the best thing that you love. And being honest and raw with, like, not everything, but that's because art is a part of your practice.
It's a practice. All we are doing is practicing how to be adults. And I think if more people admitted that to ourselves, then we'd all look at each other and go, if we're all practicing, like, is it really fair to start saying certain people should have more say than us when we're all kind of just here scratching our heads a little bit? No, maybe not. And you start to dismantle from there. I think you have to be honest. I think the more honest we be, the closer we get to how we're meant to be. I don't think we're pulling down a system. I think the more you can take little bits in your day-to-day to be who you're supposed to be, the system falls down a little bit more.
Yeah.
And that's why you need to pay, not you,
Jay, but we as people need to pay less attention to the system, because the system will tell you that you have to do this and you have to do that, and these people are bad and those people are also bad. But if you're not getting all those messages, you get to like decide what's important for you. And I don't know, if you don't follow Jay on Instagram, you should, because she's always putting stuff up that I find to be helpful to remind you to be yourself.
Yes.
That's so nice of you to say.
Well, artists are rebels, really, aren't they? You know, because, and, you know, art across the board. So, like, novelists, for example, like, when the novel was first invented, it was, like, heavily frowned upon because, you know, it was a novel. Like flights of fancy, you know, as opposed to, like, you know, when it publishing became like quite common, like the novel as a literature form was kind of rubbished a bit, like it was for women and,
I can imagine,
you know what I mean, so
was it like only
because
chicks
it breaks lots of conventions. You know, you can write a novel, yeah, and you can break grammar rules, you can break, and the same with poetry, you can break all of the normal conventions that we're raised with. And it's the same with art, I suppose, you know, and the classics, but then new art,
that's often, if you're using it responsibly, yeah. Though I think you see some, there are some people who really take this gift that we've been given and like kind of like it's like a mockery, like that banana that was,
yes,
stapled to a canvas for £150,000 or dollars or whatever it was.
That is just like mental.
That's not a responsible use of creativity.
Yeah,
that's money laundering.
Is it creative? I don't know.
No, I think art, good art, is supposed to either tell you a story or let you, your mind, find the story. Like, that's what it's meant to do. It's meant to have some kind of intrigue to it. And that doesn't necessarily mean it has to be illustrative art. It could be abstract art. But if I'm standing in front of good abstract art, I want to be looking at each of the lines and the swirls and the colours and thinking, I wonder what the artist was feeling as they were, you know, doing that. Or, oh, look at the texture here and how have they laid that? And it's sort of, it gets your mind going. That's what good art is supposed to do.
Yeah.
Make you think.
I agree. Yeah. Well, I was just going to say that one of my favourite pieces of yours, as you probably know, because I tell you all the time, is The Obeah Woman. And I, you know, what you were just saying about a good piece of art should make you look at all of the different elements and kind of get you to, if not look at the narrative in a different way, then just to kind of explore it. Perhaps. And for me, that piece of yours does that. And like for everybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about right now, I'll pop pictures up on all the social media so you can see Jay's wonderful art and you'll know exactly,
yes,
what we're talking about.
Paul will put all of your stuff in the show notes. So if you're listening to this and you wanna get and look at Jay's stuff, which you should, it'll be in the show notes.
I would be entirely grateful for people checking out the work. But I'm staring at her right now, Emma. Thank you. I'm staring at her right now. And when I was creating that, it was created in different sections, in different states of consciousness. So you kind of see this wheel as you go around her where it says different things in each section. And then the figure in the foreground itself says its own thing and has a very heavy stare. And a lot of thought went into it. And even though I made it, there are things that I can sit down and look at it and think, like, oh, I wonder what my subconscious was telling me then. And something else will click later down the line, you know.
Oh, that's amazing. I love that.
It looks really emotional to me. Like, I feel like your art conveys, and so you're saying story, and it feels also like a story, and which I would say in like in a moon way, like in an emotional way, in a feelings oriented kind of way.
Oh, I'm super in my feelings all of the time. So that's probably what you're seeing.
You know, the ones that I think really kind of show that are the ones you did, it, you were posted something the other day. Was it for one of your Lukumi groups or
quite possibly the painting of Babalu Aye?
Yes. And like when you were putting that up in the creative process, it was just like, yeah, just feelings of happiness, and you really get that sense of joy, I think, from your art, which I like in art. I know all art doesn't have to be joyful, you know.
Joy is something I like, connecting with joy. There are times you do need to connect with sorrow. You can't always be in this love and light high vibe, like it's nonsense. There are gonna be times where the art is gonna need to reflect that. We can't just hide away parts of the human experience because it's inconvenient to us.
But there are definitely a lot of artists, well, I'm not saying there's more that focus on one thing or another, but there's definitely some art that you would stand in front of and it's like grief,
yeah,
anger, which I think has such a powerful and awesome place as well. So totally. But I do see a lot of like joy in your particular art, which I very much appreciate.
Me too.
Thank you. I'm seeking joy, and I guess because I'm seeking joy, it's spreading.
Yeah.
And are you seeking ancestral stuff through your art?
Yes. I guess it's their joy that perhaps I'm trying to channel. Every day I tell myself, and it is a practice I take, I look in the mirror and I say, more and more each day you become your ancestors' wildest dream.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm looking to get towards. It's a lot of burden, you know, having to heal down a lineage, but there's also a lot of reward. It's like a long walk up a steep mountain, and then you get to the top and it's like, this is actually an amazing view and it's kind of worth it. Even if at points I wanted to rein in for help.
And how amazing that they get to help you pull in that joy. And if you're that joy, then they too are that joy.
Yeah, I don't think they had a lot of joy. I don't think, you know, when I do a lot of altar work, when I do a lot of journey work, I get this sort of feeling of like grief and not quite getting what they wanted out of their existence. And I'm determined to not have that continue on for the next 7 generations. That it doesn't seem right. Once you're alerted to a problem, you know, your house is on fire, you're not just gonna sit there and it's great. You actually like do something to try and put it out, right? So that's what I feel I need to do. But the art is very connected to that, because in telling some of these stories, whether they're mine or whether they're theirs, or whether it's a bit of column A, column B, you know, I've got to tell them. To tell these stories through art.
Oh, and that's so important and beautiful.
It gave me goosebumps.
I know. So Jay, what have you got happening? Is there anything going on?
Yes, I have a lot of things happening at the moment. So on the 26th of November, I'm going to be doing a workshop, Shiro's of the Caribbean, where I'll be talking with Emma Kelly of African spiritual traditions. We're going to be talking about Cecile Fatiman and Queen Nanny of the Maroons. I'm so excited about that.
Oh, that's going to be ace.
Yeah, I am so excited. Even in researching, because I'm doing now a lot of extra revision over my notes on Queen Nanny of Maroons, and then seeking new stuff because I want it to be like interesting and gripping. Learning about the Maroons has just been such an amazing experience. So much strength and, you know, fortitude, and they just kept going. They weren't going to be told no. So I'm really excited about this workshop to be able to talk about Queen Nanny and her place in the Maroons as an Obeah woman.
Oh, that'll be so good. Where can people check that out? Where can they find details of that?
They can find details if you DM me on my Instagram at jpercytheartist, all one word. I can send you links to the ticket sales for that, which is happening on the 26th of November. So that's, yeah, very soon. Got to prepare.
Oh, how exciting.
And you do commissions too, right?
Sorry?
You do commissions too, right?
I do commissions. I do commission artwork. Normally it's in a style that the styles that I use. So there are multiple styles that I do across my Instagram page. If you check that out, then you can see what style perhaps you like and then talk to me and I can commission something for your home in a size you want. I offer payment plans as well because, you know, art is an investment, but I think it's ultimately an investment everyone can make because, or should be making. If you're backing the right horse, then years later you have this beautiful family heirloom. And I think there's nothing more beautiful than having something that gets to stay in the family as an expression of that person's creative soul, you know. And also, I am starting a podcast with my friend Nikki.
Ooh. How exciting. Tell us about that.
It's going to be called the Afro Animist Podcast. We are still in early days at the moment, but we're going to be really making the secular a bit more spiritual by weaving animism into our, you know, our daily grumbles, our daily joys. So really looking forward to that. And that will be sometime at the end of the year or the beginning of the year. So just keep your eyes on my Instagram page.
That is so exciting.
I know. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Jay. I've really enjoyed our chats. I always enjoy our chats.
I always enjoy our chats.
Everyone can enjoy our chats.
Amazing.
Hey, everybody, go take a look at our show notes.
Yeah.
For a contact.
Take a look at the show notes.
Thank you so much for coming on and having a chat with us.
It's been great.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for spreading like that joy. Because, you know, we all listen to music and there are music that makes us feel certain ways. And art can do that too. So if you want something in your house that you can look at to kind of connect to that energy, I mean, that is animist.
Yes.
That is an energy. How can we connect with it? And sometimes you can put a river rock in your pocket and connect with that or different things. This is just like a totally different way to connect with energy. And it's so cool that you share that with people. And I'm so excited I got to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been lovely being on my favorite podcast. This has been so great. Thank you so much, guys.
Take care.
good friend. Let me learn it properly from my guru, then I will teach you. My good friend, let me learn it properly from my guru, then I will see.